FabLab Podcast, Episode 15, Interview, Eric Rolseth, fabricator and founder of Philichip.
Welcome to the FabLab Podcast, brought to you by FabricatorsFriend.com. If you own or manage a stone shop and would like to reduce your frustration while increasing your profits, you've come to the right place. As the owner of a prominent Pacific Northwest stone shop with over two decades of experience and the author of the book Less Chaos, More Cash, our host knows more than just a little bit about the challenges of owning and operating a shop. You'll hear down-to-earth, real-life solutions you can implement today to calm your shop operation and generate more profit. Thanks for joining us, and here's our host, Aaron Crowley.
Welcome back to the FabLab Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Crowley, and as always, the FabLab Podcast is brought to you by FabricatorsFriend.com. Well, I am so excited to get this podcast started because it's a first. Like I mentioned in the last couple of episodes, today we're going to make our interview with Eric Rolseth available. Eric is the founder of Philichip. He's also a fabricator from Rogers, Minnesota, and it's a great conversation about a product that he created for the stone industry. But before we get to that interview, I want to mention something else. As I've also mentioned in previous podcasts, tomorrow, July 4th, we are going to make available a video series on FabricatorsFriend.com. I've spent the bulk of my 20 years as a stone shop owner focusing on retail sales. That has been our bread and butter. And so we've put together a video course, a short sales seminar, if you will. It's a three-video series called Radical Retail Sales, and we've made that available on FabricatorsFriend.com. If you visit tomorrow, July 4th, and look at the top right-hand bar of the website, you will see a button, a blue button that says Sales Seminar. If you click that, you can download these three videos, and hopefully you will put that information to use to make that component of your business more successful and hopefully your stone shop more profitable. And now that that little promotional period is over, let's get to the subject of this episode. Let's get to the interview I had with Eric Rolseth a couple of weeks ago when he came to Oregon and visited my stone shop. Enjoy. I am really excited to sit down with my friend Eric Rolseth of Estonia Stone Artisans from Rogers, Minnesota, and also of Philichip. He has come out here to Portland, Oregon to visit us, and we're going to talk about this product he has developed for the stone industry to help us fix chips and scratches and divots and blemishes in the surface of our countertops. So, Eric, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. And I wasn't nervous until I saw this long list of questions you've got. Oh, my gosh.
No need to be nervous. We're just going to have a conversation here. Okay. So, welcome to the podcast. And this is the first interview we've done, so I'm a little nervous, too, to tell you the truth. So, we'll just have a discussion here. And I think the audience is going to appreciate it because you've got something fantastic to share. And so, to begin with, I kind of want to get an idea of just your background in the stone industry. So how did you get into stone fabrication?
Well, I came from the woodworking industry. I came from making cabinets, and in the shop that I was working at, we also made countertops, laminate, and at the time it was Corian.
Okay.
And that was in high school. I made a grandfather clock and ended up on the news, so I had some notoriety, and that's what got me a job.
Huh.
Working in a cabinet shop.
Oh, fantastic.
And then, of course, I went on to college, and while going through college, I still made countertops. And then I came out of it and went back into making countertops. It was either make countertops or I changed my major for the sixth time, and that's not an exaggeration. So that's how I got into making countertops. And okay. But in the beginning, it was laminate and Corian. And then somewhere in the late 90s, our customers kept coming to us and say, hey, would you please start doing stone?
Hmm.
You know, these guys that are doing our stone, they came from the monument cubic industry, and they think a seam is the width of your finger. And in solid surface, it was ideally invisible.
Right.
We didn't say invisible. We said inconspicuous, but we wanted it to be invisible.
Right.
So.
Huh. So then did your countertop shop that you were, or the cabinet shop you were working for, did they start doing granite while you were still working for them?
No, I started off on my own. I started making countertops. You know, for I started my own company in 1991, even while I was still in college.
Wow.
And just made laminate countertops and Corian solid surface.
Oh, okay.
So it was my own company that made a transition in the stonework.
Very good. So describe that transition. I'm curious to know how, did you say it as an opportunity or as something you were drug kicking and screaming into?
Well, a little bit of both. Okay. We ended up having a, I can't say the company's name, but we had another company do the fabrication work for us. So initially we just sold the projects and we did the template install portion. And that sounds good in theory, but they were so bad. They were just so bad at fabrication that we had to learn how to fabricate just to fix all the mistakes. And we grew pretty quickly, so we were selling 10 to 15 kitchens a week.
Wow.
And so we spent so much of our time fixing mistakes that they made. That's how we learned how to fabricate, was fixing the hard things.
Wow. And
so I guess I suppose that leads into Philichip a little bit too. But eventually we were large enough where we had to buy our own fabrication equipment.
Okay.
And support ourselves.
So then you, so you've had a, you owned a fab shop then for 25, 30 years then, going on, you said 91?
91.
Wow.
So 17 years.
Wow.
17 years? No.
No, 27.
27 years.
Wow.
Yeah, give or take a decade. We're not that old. The numbers don't say that.
You don't look that old. You don't look like you could own a shop for 27 years. So, well, then, in, since you mentioned Philichip and doing a lot of repairs and a lot of fixing, you know, what was the problem that you were experiencing that led to the Philichip?
Well, there just wasn't a product that did all the things that Philichip does. Philichip is a UV curable product, meaning it's not solvent based where there's a reaction and that's how it cures and gets hard, but the reaction happens from UV light being exposed to the acrylic. And the materials that were out there, they did not have the qualities that we needed to fix chips and countertops. They weren't either hard enough, or they didn't have the adhesive qualities that you needed if you're trying to fix a scratch or something smaller, or they didn't have the right color. They were yellow or gray, and they weren't shapeable. We needed the characteristics that were particular to what we do in countertops.
And would you say those kind of like solutions existed in the solid surface industry, where you had access to that kind of thing for that product, but maybe not for granite?
No, they didn't have them for that product, but solid surface industry, that's resins. So I did have some understanding and some background in resins, which helped with developing Philichip.
Okay. So you had this problem. You were aware of the, in a sense, the lack of a solution. How long were you aware of the solution before you decided maybe you'd take a stab at, you know, creating it yourself?
I don't know. I really wasn't. I mean, our best solution at the time was super glue. And if everybody's been out there, they know the pluses and the minuses of super glue. And but I didn't know how to start. How do you start a company like this? How do you develop a product?
Yeah.
And so that all came about by chance.
Okay. How, and when you say chance, describe that. How did it come about?
Well, it it starts with convincing your wife that you need to go to a trade show in Italy. And she's got to take care of everything that's involved with being home with young kids. But I went to a trade show in Italy. It was Marmomac in Verona. And when I say it was by chance, I happened to rent a room in an apartment building, and the rest of the apartment building was filled up with a chemical company. They had all the other rooms there. So every evening after the show, we would meet up on the very top floor, the veranda, and it overlooked Verona, and it was beautiful. Wow. And our host had, you know, cheeses and breads and meats and drinks out there. So we'd sit up there and we'd talk. And so I got to talk to chemists who are slightly more excitable than accountants. I say that with all the love. Actually, they were turned out to be great guys. And I'd say, hey, why can't you make a product that's UV curable that does this, this, and this? And they'd say, we can do that. And I said, well, and it should do this and this, and it should have real strong adhesive qualities, and you should be able to color it and shape it. And they said, well, we can do that. And I said, and it shouldn't be so ridiculously expensive that, you know, regular guys can't afford it. And they said, we can do that too.
Huh.
And that's when I had the aha moment where, excuse me, we just said, hey, this could happen.
Wow.
So that was the start of a Philichip.
Okay. So were they weren't a United States based company then?
Nope. They were based outside of the U.S. So what I did when I got back is I found out there's lots of issues with dealing with a company internationally. Mm-hmm. And to learn more, I went to eBay and Amazon, and I bought every UV curable acrylic you can imagine.
Huh. And well, those would be products that were not stone industry focused or related. These are just
UV curable acrylics. Huh. So everything that you use to fix the screen on your cell phone, to flying or tying flies for fly fishing, to your nails. You know, I bought special lights that you use to put acrylic on your nails and cure those. Oh my gosh, I got boxes of stuff. So my wife just thought I was crazy, I think.
Huh. And that was after you talked to these guys, yeah. kind of just in terms of the education process.
And then that was the second aha moment when I found out how much I didn't know about chemistry.
So you're dealing with scientists. These, when you say chemist, I mean, this is a scientist with a laboratory.
Yep.
And very exacting
yep.
standards and measurements and whatnot.
Yep. So that's exactly what it was. And it became apparent that I needed help from these chemists and the scientists. So I began finding some chemists that were domestically, and I worked with them to develop PhiloChip, what ultimately became PhiloChip, a product that had all of these qualities and that I could bring to the market.
Okay. So the first company. Okay, so the first company wasn't the company you worked with to develop it. They told you that there was, in fact, a solution, and that was the aha moment.
Yep. If I looked hard enough, I would find it.
Huh. Interesting. So. Very interesting. That's fantastic. So in terms of the product development stage, now you've tested the fingernail kit, and you realize there's a lot you don't know. You're working with this company. How did that unfold in terms of just the prototypes and the back and forth that was necessary to take it from an idea to a product that was, you know, measurably and predictably, you know, going to solve this problem for other people? How long did that take? What did that process look like?
It was a process over probably of 6 to 9 months. Mm-hmm. Gosh, it took a lot of patience, a lot more patience than I would have thought. When we came up with the first prototypes, we put them in the syringes, and it was too thin. The viscosity wasn't right, so it leaked all over the place. And then it was too thick, and it wouldn't get into the smallest penetrations that it needed to. And then it took too long to cure, and then it cured too quick. And then some of them, you know, actually had a solvent component in there, which was a completely different issue, because then it evaporates or essentially off-gases and shrinks. Mm-hmm. So getting back to your main questions, it took 6 to 9 months to get those issues worked out. Hmm. And that's actually starting of how the distribution came about in the beginning. Was I was working on my desk, and I had all these prototypes laid out. I was testing them, and a tool distributor from Granite City Tool, he just happened to walk through the door and look and see what I was doing on my desk. And he said, "Hey, what's that?"
Wow.
So I immediately grabbed a cardboard sink template and set it right over the top, and I said, "Nothing. Nothing going on here." And he goes, "Oh, I think I know what's going on." And so I'd kept it under wraps, but I had been working on it for a solid probably year to 18 months before anything was released to the market.
Hmm. And in terms of that prototype process, when you're just give an insight into working with a chemical company. So they're a business. They've got, you know, economic constraints. They've got to be doing work. They're not just, "Hey, here's a guy that has an idea. Let's just volunteer our time and resources to help him develop this." What did that look like? How did you make those decisions to invest more money in it, or to sort of keep taking those steps through that development process? And how was that relationship with them?
It was a good relationship, and I got to say, I think it was just the favor of God that I don't know how they put up with me, you know, because was I paying them? Yes. Was it enough to justify all that they were doing? Probably not. But there was a commitment there that had to get made on my end to buying material.
Once it was a viable product?
Even as we were going along through the process, I had to say, "Hey, I'm not doing this to, you know, to buy a couple thousand dollars worth of glue. I'm going to be a much better customer of yours than that."
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a handshake agreement, you know, a lot of verbal agreements from there.
Okay.
And
but it was doable.
It was doable, and it was a win-win for each party.
Fantastic.
So
okay.
They continue to develop it.
So somebody from Granite City Tool sees it. What's the next stage? What happens as you... Let me ask you a different question. When did you begin presenting this product to other fabricators to see what the reaction was?
Okay. I'll go back to the first question.
Okay.
So the same nosy... He wasn't that nosy. He was a great guy. the person that came in my office, he comes back about a month later, and he goes, "Hey, remember that project that you weren't working on last month that wasn't a UV curable acrylic?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, interestingly, we just found out from our supplier that the other product on the market is being discontinued. Hmm. They aren't fulfilling our orders. They aren't shipping anything that's already been ordered. We are in desperate need of it. Can you give us some, you know, of this product that you don't have?" And he's just good sense of humor. And so I began discussions with him, and we said, "I can get you something in about, you know, 2 months." He says, "Well, can you do 4 weeks?" And I said, "What a good salesman would." And I said, "Yes." and I did. I ended up coming up with a product. We ended up finishing just the stuff that happens when you build a new business. Mm-hmm. You know, it's everything from making logos and labels and stickers and cases and boxes and, you know, everything that has to happen for it to come together.
Hmm. So then up to this point, were you operating everything, and I guess maybe this is kind of a financial, but more just a practical question. So were you running what was to become Philichip? Was this all like under the umbrella of Estonia, your granite shop? Or had you already started a separate company?
No, we had started a separate LLC, so everything was run through that. That LLC was really just, my wife and I said it was just a giant sucking sound, where all that LLC did was borrow money. Because it borrowed money from Estonia and our personal accounts in the beginning just to fund it, to keep it going. Mm-hmm. So,
fantastic. So you already had... So at what point, you know, it's an idea stage, and you have, because you're in the industry and you know there's a need, but it hasn't necessarily been validated by somebody else who isn't invested in it like you are.
Yeah, yeah.
At what point did you maybe make that transition from, you know, we know there's enough of a market for this product that it's worth risking, investing, borrowing money from the stone shop to continue, you know, to build the product?
That was about 9 months in at the first trade show. Hmm. We did have some orders that came in right when we started it, but it was just a trickle. The other product wasn't as good, frankly, as Philichip, not nearly as good, and it was much more expensive. Hmm. So finding people to adopt it and begin using it, that's a challenge that you've got to get over. Hmm. But a big change was, excuse me, just over 3 years ago, we had the first covering show, and I went to the trade show and I did demonstrations in the booth of Granite City Tool, and we took pieces of stone and we took a core bit on top of them, and we tried to wreck them and fixed them, and that was when we had our first sense that this was really, really going to become something in the industry. I don't know what I should say that. Was going to become something, but it's a big deal for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a lot of people use it now. They're familiar with it now. It's become a brand. Mm-hmm. So it was at that trade show where the aisles were stopped in front of where we were doing demonstrations, you know.
Like they were in our shop this morning
with
our installers and our shop guys and our office staff poking their head in, and a crowd draws a crowd.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to see how it happens, just watching something cure that quick. It's something that looks like magic, but really it's something that meets a need and does it really well and really quick. So that was a spark there. It was about 9 months in. And the first day of the show, that supplier sold out everything they had in their warehouse back in Minnesota. And then the second day, they sold out everything they had again. And then the third day, they ordered a ton and they sold out just about all that too. So that's when it started rolling. I call home and tell my wife, "Honey, we sold more today." She goes, "I know, I get the POs."
So. So one of the reasons, or I should say one of the reasons, one of the thoughts I had about doing an interview like this, because you own a stone shop and our audience is stone shop owners, and to me this is marvelous demonstration of seeing a need in the marketplace and being closest to it, you know, as opposed to having somebody who's maybe one layer removed, they're a distributor and they see a need, but they really don't know, they're not face to face with it every day. And so they're just not as likely to develop a solution to a real problem. They might deliver a solution, but maybe the industry doesn't necessarily see that as a problem yet. But you are in the middle of it. You see this, you solve this problem with your own company. I think there's lots of other problems in our industry that can be solved, other solutions mm-hmm. that have yet to be, in a sense, created and introduced to our industry. And so the idea for me is to just highlight this story that you saw an opportunity and pursued it, and now it's a sideline business.
We should have this at the beginning of the interview. This is perfect.
Okay, well.
No, it is, because we have a unique advantage
yeah.
that we see into this industry because we're in it.
Yeah, yeah. And so what I see is this is being a great encouragement to other stone shop owners who are also very close to other problems that maybe we don't even see. And as an encouragement to not, you know, believe that it's got to be somebody else to develop the solution to that problem, but to realize, and I want to get to, this is taking forever for me to set this question up. So A, much more likely to solve a problem because you're closest to it.
Yeah.
But B, describe the impact that having another business like this has now had on your life as a business owner, and you know, as opposed to just owning a stone shop and being, you know, having all your eggs in that basket, now you've got two companies. How has that changed life as a business owner for you?
Well, for me personally, it's much better. As far as the stone shop, you know, stone has been a passion for a long time because I've been involved in it. I take a lot of pride in it, but man, it's also been a big headache. And I think for a lot of stone owners, they get that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an incredible amount of risk and capital expense for a smaller margin. Mm-hmm. And we work to develop our skills as business people to try to get as much margin out of that as we can. Mm-hmm. In Fellowship, quite frankly, there's a significantly more margin in it, mm-hmm. Even though we tried to price it strategically very low. Mm-hmm. But it's given me a new outlet for creativity, you know, because right now, I mean, people look at Fellowship and they'll say, okay, well, it has this now, and it has a starter kit, and now it has a master kit with 19 colors. And they don't realize, you know, behind the scenes, I'm working on the next 2, 3, and 4 steps. Mm. And that's part of staying ahead of your competition. Mm-hmm. But it's also just meeting a need, you know, being that, I'm in the stone shop and I've been in the industry for so long. I understand the needs better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And rather than looking at it from a perspective of maybe I'm not a chemist, or I'm not used to dealing with chemical companies, or maybe I'm not a machinist and a manufacturer and all these things are that much harder. No, look at all the advantages that you and I have mm-hmm. for, you know, understanding what is exactly needed. Mm-hmm. So I use my strengths as best I can, and I find other people that are talented to fill in those areas of weakness. But I love it. I love that it's opened up a whole lot of other doors for me to do other things. So I'd like to continue to develop Fellowship.
Yeah, and you know, having had the stone sleeves and the aprons as that sideline business, it feels as though, you know, running as if all my eggs were in my stone shop, the level of that sense, the risk would be more acute, and that sense of risk would just be more obvious, where there's something paralleling this that's generating income, at least for me, has been a tremendous relief to know that between the two, my risk is spread out over more, the risk doesn't feel as heavy and as weighty, and I was just curious how that's affected your you know, just I guess that was kind of how I was asking that question.
I don't think it's affected me as much. That's something that weighs more on my wife, probably. Mm-hmm. I'm the risk taker. I'm the adventurous one for that. So I'll gamble it all. I'll do it. But I say that half in jest that no. Everything is strategically planned, and I calculate the risk as much as I can, mm-hmm. as much as anybody can,
yeah.
you know, for what we could control.
Yeah. What has, you mentioned your wife a couple of times, is she involved in the stone shop and fill a chip, or is it just fill a chip?
Yes, she does the books for the stone shop. She does all that. For fill a chip, she's really done everything from putting the plungers in, the syringes, the barrels, putting the kits together, labeling them. And that's something the whole family has done. I mean, in the beginning of fill a chip, we would bring all the parts home, uh-huh. and we would tell the kids, I'm like, okay, you want to watch TV? Here,
I love it.
Here you're doing fill a chip, you know, so they know how many needles go in each kit, and they count out release sheets that go in each kit, and they put plungers together, and we used to put all of the stickers on all of the syringes
by hand. Wow.
So you had to peel out every little sticker for every little syringe, and so they weren't allowed to watch TV unless they were doing fill a chip, so... In the beginning, it was this great idea to make them entrepreneurs and uh-huh. understand this. And yeah, it took about 8 months and they hated it. they were our forced labor, but...
What a great opportunity.
Yeah, they got it. They asked so many questions and it's really insightful, you know. And it's great to be able to explain to your kids what a business is. You know, mm-hmm. a business is something that meets a need. It brings value to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So... And if it doesn't, I don't really have any interest in it, and I would tell them to get ready to run. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So ideally, fill chip is meeting a need, mm-hmm. and it's ideally doing it better than anything else in the world. That's our goal, mm-hmm. and to continue to perfect it, to get better and better.
Well, you know, as you were doing the, I guess we'll jump back off of that. I think that's the family component there, I just think is neat. In and of itself, just to have that opportunity to involve, you know, it's not like you can have your kids in the fab shop when you're moving big pieces around.
Yeah, so to those people who got the first fill a chip kits that would have a dog hair on it or cat hair, or the sticker was on crooked, I'm sorry. Thank you for your business.
Oh, that is great. Well, to kind of wrap things up, because I know we've got to be conscious of the time. In bringing it back in terms of just the benefit of fill a chip, you know, today I learned something. You were doing the demo in our shop for our installers, and you were talking about the difference between the
it super glue. Don't say a brand.
Well, it was the hot. We call it hot stuff. Is that a brand?
Yeah,
hot stuff is a brand. Okay, it's the fast acting, you know, acrylic glue.
Yep.
And you were describing the difference between fill a chip and that product, and I was just amazed, not only the shrinkage and then the coloration. Can you talk about those two components for other folks who might be using that other product and aren't aware of fill a chip and how it differs?
Yeah, well, first off, that other product has a use and it has a purpose. We have it in our own shop. We have super glue. They're crinolactic adhesives. Mm-hmm. Said that wrong.
Which, in a sense, probably the term would be hot stuff, maybe most recognized.
Hot stuff or super glue,
okay.
or CA glue, or okay. something like that. we use it as an adhesive in certain requirements, but it has some limitations for chip filling, especially on the surface or on the edge. Mm. One is that it has a higher level of solvent, a significant level of solvent in the material. So what happens is it uses that solvent as it dries or evaporates or off gases. That's when it hardens.
Okay.
But not all of that is evaporated or off gas right when it's cured in the beginning. So if you fill something with super glue, you scrape it off flat, whether it's on the corner or an edge or the surface, if you're going to go back a week later, guess what? It is going to shrink. Hmm. It is just the nature of the material. There's no way that you can get around having that shrinkage there. The other issue that is overlooked often is, what is it going to look like in a year? Hmm. Because if you go back a year later, it's going to be yellow or gold. Hmm. It's not going to be clear. It's not going to stay clear.
And that's because of the solvent inside the...
It's just because of the nature of the material and the chemistry of it. Whereas the fillet chip, it should stay the exact same color it is a year from now, 5 years from now.
The shrinkage is because of the off-gassing, because it's salt. Excuse me. The shrinkage is because of the solvent-based nature of the...
of the product, that is.
And then the yellowing, that occurs because of... what's the cause of that? That ongoing, just you said it turns yellow or turns gold.
It does. It has a yellowish or goldish tint to it. Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact scientific name of it. Okay. I just know it happens every time, and there's nothing we can do to eliminate it. Okay. So...
and then that's where fillet chip is very different. So to describe the brief scientific or chemical differences that keep it from shrinking and keep it from yellowing, you know, over time.
Okay. Well, the idea behind the fillet chip is that acrylic is 100% solids based, meaning that there isn't something that is going to evaporate or shrink. So if you think about it just in sheer terms of volume, there's nothing that is going to leave that volume. There's nothing that needs to happen for it to cure other than the fillet chip for the resin to be exposed to UV light. Hmm. When it's exposed to UV light, that interaction and action is initiated. The molecules begin moving very fast, and it hardens. Hmm. It happens very quick. It's in 15 to 30 seconds that the clear hardens completely.
Hmm. It's fascinating. So then with that, you know, there's an awareness of fillet chip growing. People are becoming aware that there's a better solution to what might have been standard, which, you know, in our shop, that's been the standard, you know, the super glue or the hot stuff has just been what we've used, and we've suffered the consequences of the shrinking and the yellowing and didn't really realize there was an alternative. So you've developed it. So for folks who want to learn more about it, what would you tell them? Where can they go? Where can they find it? How can they get their hands on it?
Right now, fillet chip is sold through distribution, meaning anybody you're buying your stone tools from, whether it's Granite City Tool, who was the first, they've now been bought by Grand Quartz. So Grand Quartz carries it, Regent, Braxton Bragg, Helix. I can't go through the whole list here, but, you know, no one leaves somebody out, but there's quite a few people. But all of them
are suppliers. Available.
Yes, it's widely available. If you want to see videos, you can go to our website, fillachip.com. It's going to have some videos on there. We're in the process of making some new videos. The new videos will have tips and tricks on fixing quartz, repairing edges, where so many of the chips happen after we install the countertops, they happen. And also for custom color matching. Okay. So,
yeah, and anybody listening who wants to know, you know, he's mentioning tips and tricks. He showed us a couple of tips today in our shop that our crews were just absolutely amazed at some of those techniques. So make sure you check back with fillachip.com as those videos come out to see how you can use this product in your business.
Yep, and if you go on there, we're creating a button right now where anytime we have a new product or a new thing that comes out, if you enter your email in there, we'll be able to send you over a link to that video. So you'll be able to see the newest things that are coming out. We've got some exciting new stuff coming out for edge finishing, where so many of the issues happen right on the edges, especially around sinks and on outside edges. And the other is textures. We've got a new solution for fixing textures and the compact surfaces, the sintered and the other materials, the porcelains and the ceramics that are becoming so much more popular out there, working on solutions to fix chips in those.
Wow. Fantastic.
So ideally, we'll continue to have lots of tools that meet a need. If you have anything that you want or any questions, please get a hold of us. We're fabricators that have a product, and we'd love to have a solution for you.
Oh, fantastic. So. Well, Eric, thank you for spending this time. You know, it's interesting. You spend a lifetime in an industry using things like adhesives and diamond blades, only to realize, you know, you don't know anything. This technical background, the scientific, you know, and chemical, you know, nature of what is just, it's an adhesive, is just, it's amazing. So I have greatly appreciated the education today and just learning something new about the products that we're using and now, you know, a solution to a problem that we've had. And I just appreciate the time and appreciate you developing this product and being an example to the rest of the industry for seeing a need and filling it. So thank you for joining me today.
Oh, of course. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Well, that wraps up this interview with Eric Rolseth, founder of Filichip and owner of Estonia Stone Artisans in Rogers, Minnesota. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I sure did. I learned a lot, and I hope that you're inspired to consider bringing some of the solutions that you've created for your stone shop to the rest of the industry. Perhaps you've got a company there that you didn't even realize. Well, that wraps up this podcast as well. Episode 15 is in the can. I want to remind you to visit fabricatorsfriend.com to check out our custom line of fabrication gear. And remember, make sure you check it out tomorrow as we launch our Radical Retail Sales Seminar. Just check the homepage, look at the right-hand side of the top of the page, click the Sales Seminar button, and download those three free videos. Until next time, happy fabricating.